better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
So it seems like every grad transfer or transfer out there that you see being tossed around on social media, being reportedly in the transfer portal, that Arkansas has made contact or there's interest or a number of different things. There's connection to the Razorback basketball program. So that has me continuously wondering, does Eric Musselman already know what Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones are going to do? Is he getting ready for roster changes, if it's just them two or if it's other guys? Tommy, you always bring up contingency plans, looking forward to something that could happen, might happen, will happen. You always have to have a backup plan. You always have to have something set. Yeah. And I know that we've made the joke that we never expected the coronavirus. Like, we could have never anticipated that. Yeah. That's something that we just could have never imagined would have happened. But I think with this kind of situation, you look ahead, if you're Eric Musselman, it seems like he's been doing that to this point, of what not only next year, but in 2 years and in the future with this basketball program. And that's why he's continuously, you see the Arkansas basketball program linked to a number of different players. So I'll pose this question as we start out this morning. Does Eric Musselman already know the future decisions of Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones? Have they made them yet? Have both of them told, or one of them told him privately, of what they're going to do? Have the decisions even made yet? I just continuously ask myself that question. I know this is one of the big storylines, what's going to be the future of Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe, and we've talked about it multiple times on this program, but I don't know if we've ever hit it from this angle yet to this point. So that's how I want to start out the morning.
You know, I don't know. I mean, that's the only correct way to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
But we can talk about the possibilities either way. I don't know if Eric Musselman knows this. I don't think that just because he is showing interest in some grad transfers, just because he's spending time seeing what's available in the marketplace, means he knows what's coming. I think you always, as you say, you lay out contingency plans that you may or may not follow through with. You don't, a contingency plan is that. I'm not going to do B unless A happens. You know, I don't need a player in a shooting guard role unless one of these guys, you know. So, I mean, he's looking at his options. I don't know if he knows their decision, because, quite frankly, I'm not convinced that Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones know what they're going to do yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a fair point, but I continuously see these names be associated with the Arkansas basketball program, that thought just creeps in the back of my head. That doesn't necessarily mean it's correct. It doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong either, but that's a thought I think we have to consider as we move forward with these decisions. This is the Morning Rush. He's Tommy Kraft. I'm Ty Richardson. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. Always streaming live on hitthatline.com. On smart speakers, just say Play ESPN Arkansas. If you have the TuneIn app, you can find us there. And if you have Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter, you can watch our video stream. I know many of you are now working from home. Your routine has been changed up a little bit, but you can keep your routine by listening to us just on another platform from just your normal car radio, radio at work, or however you may listen to us normally. We have so many different avenues and platforms that you can get to us. You could do that also if you don't get a chance from 6 to 9 to listen to the full show. If you miss something and you want to go back, you can find our podcast on wherever you listen to podcasts: iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud. They are, I'm not kidding, I put them on every single platform where I got here, so you can do that as well. So if you had to put some money on it, Tommy, right now, March 24th at 6:04 a.m., would you say that Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones had made a decision, or they're still deciding to this point?
I'd say they're still deciding to this point. And I think anyone's plans, what plan do you have for the future that's certain right now? considering what's going on in the world. What in your life is certain moving forward as far as plans over the next 12 months? You got anything that's etched in stone, certain?
I'll be doing this radio show every morning at 6 a.m.
We hope, you know. I sure hope to be here. Sure hope you guys are here with me. Nothing feels certain right now, you know, for the next 12 months. My family's scheduled to go on vacation at the end of May, first week of June. That's probably out. You know, you start thinking about contingency plans to that, all right? If we can't go to destination A, why don't we plan a trip to a different destination? Well, when? You know, everything's put on hold right now. So I find it hard to believe that anyone's come to any solid conclusion. I'm definitely doing this. I'm definitely going to turn pro. How could you make any kind of declaration be solid? You may have a lean. You may have hard lean. But how can anyone have their mind made up on anything right now, Ty, considering what we're all the uncertainty we're faced with?
And you brought up this the other day. You kind of want to wait till the last possible moment to decide so you can get all the information with what's going to happen with the NBA draft, how the teams are going to evaluate you as an individual, and everything that ties into that. Oh, man. And I know...
Who's even scouting you right now? You missed it. Now, they got a season's worth of scouting. We were at the very beginning of the postseason. But there's not, you know, a lot of these NBA teams will have camps and workouts and opportunities for you to display your skills even more, combine style type things. Those things aren't probably going to happen. You know, I still wonder about these deadlines. I know we're a month out from the time you got to declare. I wonder if that's even going to hold. I don't trust anything right now that, yeah, this is the way it's going to be. Sun rising in the east, setting in the west, and that the taxes will be collected at some point. That's the only things I know for certain right now.
And I think I read this in potentially Sports Illustrated. I know that, as you mentioned, the dates listed are solid at this point, but they're subject to change.
Yeah.
So
they're talking about how to play the season. The NBA, the draft and bringing new players in, all of that is such an afterthought right now. They're trying to figure out how to resume their season and how to schedule playoffs and do we want to go head-to-head? You know, that's a big topic of conversation out there right now. Do we go head-to-head with the NFL? Do we go head-to-head with college football? Do we use this as the opportunity to shift our season? How do we complete this season and then start the next one on time? I mean, there's so many things that the NBA has to figure out right now. Okay, if we get a green light to start back, how much time do we need to ramp up? What is the arena availabilities? You know, these arenas, after the seasons are complete.
Concerts.
Exactly.
Different events.
All kinds of events get booked in there.
Mm-hmm.
So what are arena availabilities to play these games? Some of these teams own their arenas and could make contingencies. Some do not.
There's a lot of storylines.
There's a lot of moving parts here. And somewhere, all of those things seem to me, at least if I was Adam Silver, if I'm an owner of an NBA team, all of those things seem to be more important right now than draft. I'm not saying draft isn't important. I'm not saying evaluating players aren't important, but
it's not a front runner,
though.
It's
not a priority.
Yeah, correct. And so, to your point, Tommy, I think with the NBA and their decision making, yes, you don't want to compete against the NFL. You don't want to compete against college football, but if it's possible, you want to finish your season. And to change up the season aspect of it, I think a lot of people wish that the NBA would start on Christmas Day. That's when a lot of people, because you don't compete against college football, you don't get compete against NFL.
So
that is a position where you would much, as an NBA executive, as the television rights, you would much rather compete against baseball than you would against NFL or college football. That's an easy answer.
The only thing the NBA has of great value is their playoffs. So why not put that later on in the year where more people, I think, would watch them when you had less to compete with?
Yeah, and again, they would much rather compete against college baseball, against the MLB, than the NFL and college football. It's an easy comparison.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Oh, he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
So I saw this question asked. forgetting what message board I saw it on, but it was, and I think a lot of people are going to point to one answer, and you kind of have to sit back and think about it a little bit. But right now, on March 24th at 6:30 a.m., what football upset would you want this upcoming season? I think most people's immediate reaction, immediate response is going to be Alabama at home. But let me lay out a couple different scenarios and a couple different football like things that I think would interest you and might make it let, I don't know if it'll necessarily overtake the Alabama game, Tommy, but at least make you think about it. So Notre Dame, Arkansas, is this their first time ever playing in South Bend? Ever. Okay, that's what I just wanted to make sure. Lou Holtz.
In fact, I'm pretty certain. Well, look, I can grab my media guide here. I'm pretty certain it's the first time they've ever played.
Is that correct? I knew it was going to be the first time they ever played in South Bend. Yeah, Jenkins is looking that up. But
I think I'm right on
that. I mean, we've talked about obviously trying to go down there and making a whole shebang out of it.
I'm going to go up there.
With that game ahead and just the everything that ties it, so much rich tradition and history with Notre Dame football. We had Rudy as a rejoin earlier in the program. I think that if you look where that game is, the fact that it's on the road, the fact that Notre Dame right now is a top 15 team, and again, there's something about beating the Fighting Irish. Maybe it's not the same as when they were really, was it the 80s that they were riding high, or was it the 90s?
Lou Holtz had them in 80s and 90s. Lou Holtz had them as a national championship contender for an extended period of time. Now, this was before, obviously, even the BCS era, much less college football playoff era. But, yeah.
We listed it yesterday on Bovada. Notre Dame is a 16.5-point favorite. So, if you're a betting man or woman, you want to get on there right now, you can toss money either way. But I picture Notre Dame as these, like, rich, snotty-nosed kid. And I actually had a buddy that went to grad school up there for a county and loved it. And I wouldn't call him superficial or anything like that, but maybe the perception of Notre Dame, Tommy, is just kind of Ivy League-esque. Is that a fair comparison, that they fall into that category?
I would say academically they certainly fall. It's a very tough school to get into academically. I wouldn't argue that.
And I think it's just kind of a pride thing, the fact that if you could go into South Bend, Touchdown Jesus, everything that's involved with that school.
For years, there's other Catholic universities and colleges around the country, but it was kind of the national Catholic university.
Correct.
If you were raised and you went to Little Rock Catholic, or you went to a Catholic school, or you just came from a Catholic background, that was the school you wanted to go to.
And I think with them, you think about the Catholics versus convicts, the Miami game, and everything that was tied into that. There's an extra oomph when you play Notre Dame. Now, maybe it's not the same level as the 80s or 90s when Luke Holtz had them riding high.
They're still Notre Dame, though.
Correct. And there's still that sense of pride and that sense of tradition that if you can level off and beat them. You found something?
Yeah, this is the first meeting. Yeah,
I was pretty sure.
I knew it was the first one South Bend. I couldn't remember if they had played previously.
They'd never played in a bowl. They've never played anywhere. I was 99% certain. So
I wonder if Lou Holtz will be at that game. You think he'd make a trip down there?
That's a good question. I mean, probably so. Both schools would like to probably have him there with his connection to both schools.
Wears Arkansas pants and his Notre Dame sweater.
It'll be all Notre Dame.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that's a game. And maybe
he won a national title there.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's fair.
He's okay. All Notre Dame.
Yeah, I guess that'd be the equivalent of Spurrier wearing South Carolina and Florida stuff at the same time.
Not going to do it.
He's just going to wear Florida stuff. Yep. The other one that we'll move on to is Texas A&M. Now, Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher, they have underperformed in his tenure there so far, and I think a lot of Texas A&M fans are starting to get a little they're getting a little frustrated, a little agitated with how this season, how these seasons have transpired so far from Jimbo Fisher, because you think about the 10-year, $75 million contract, you think about the national championship trophy that has been transcribed with all but the year associated with the title, which is the most dumbest, arrogant thing.
No pressure.
Yeah. And Texas A&M, like, you think about that, that is the most, like, I get certain school, like Alabama, I understand why their fans are cocky based on their national championships. Kentucky basketball, Duke, I understand that based on
there's
what they're back.
There's decades of wanting.
Correct.
There's
correct.
History.
You could say LSU baseball. You could say Vanderbilt. Like, I understand why fans there might be a little cockier, a little more arrogant than others.
Even Notre Dame.
But Texas A&M, Tommy, is probably the most arrogant fan base out there without anything to back it up.
Nothing.
Which is
in
just
any sport.
Incredible. Baseball, basketball, football. There's always this.
I guess women's basketball is the best they've got, right?
Gary Blair. Yeah, that's really the.
That's the best you've got.
Yeah, and credit to him and some Arkansas.
Maybe they're really good in track, but they're not as good as Arkansas in track.
Yeah, and so.
Maybe they're good in some other. You know, spring sport that I'm not aware of, but no, of the major sports, they've done nothing.
I know pride comes before the fall, but I understand certain fan bases having it with how their programs have been over the years. But Texas A&M, those two should not be pride and camaraderie should not be associated with them because of their lack of success in football, basketball, and baseball. And when I say success, I mean over the top postseason success, which they haven't had. Like they haven't been to a college football playoff. I can't remember the last time they've won a national championship. College World Series drought's been quite some time. I mean, this is a school that, for whatever reason, thinks it's a top dog, thinks it's a tier one program in every major sport, and is nowhere close. Right. So, I mean, you look at these games. 2012, you got smoked by Johnny Manziel. 2013, you had Texas A&M come into Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium, and Arkansas actually put up a decent fight. I think it was 45-33 was the final. You have Dietrich Wise sacking Manziel, doing his dance moves and stuff. 2014, you have the fake punt with Sam Irwin Hill. You should have won that game, didn't. 2015, you should have won that game too, didn't. Trevor Knight, 2016, really ran off in the fourth quarter, and they kind of opened that game up a little bit, but that was close in the third. 2017, close ball game. 2018, close ball game. 2019, another agonizing defeat. I mean, you've had so many opportunities, so many chances.
Which one was Skipper the Tripper?
I want to say, so that was that on a Jay Will or Collins run?
16 or I can't 16 or 17.
Yeah, I don't have to. I'd have to go back and look at that because was that without put up you up three touchdowns? Yeah. Right, and I think it was 15.
Yeah. I think it's 15.
Yeah, I mean,
but that to me is one of the things that just stand out in the something so stupid, something so unusual that kept you from winning.
Correct. So you've had the agonizing, the painful losses happen every single year, and it's been with
they hadn't been that much better than you.
Yeah,
but they think they are.
John L. Smith, Brett Bielema, and Chad Morris. So now you're on your fourth coach as the Arkansas football program that you're still trying to beat Texas A&M.
God almighty.
And
we owned them. You know, when Tyler Wilson was there and Ryan Mallett was there and Bobby Petrino was there, you owned them.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I think 2009 was the close game. I think they opened it up a little more in 2010. And then Tyler and the boys came back with that. I think they're down 35-17 in half. And then Tyler and company just came back and went on a rampage in the second half, and they ended up winning that football game. It was incredible. And
him and Jerry is right.
Yeah, you think about the sense of pride you had as an Arkansas Razorback after that 2011 game in Dallas Cowboys Stadium, and you just haven't had that since playing Texas A&M. So that to me, not necessarily because of the caliber of game this year, Tommy, but the way you've lost previously has to at least factor into the equation when it comes to picking one upset this upcoming year.
Well, I think we're both of the mindset this needs to be your rival. This needs to be the team you look at, you circle first on the calendar, you want to beat the most. Yeah, Alabama and LSU are nice if you can get wins there, but the team you want to beat the most needs to be A&M. There's no natural rival for A&M anymore on their schedule. The league's tried to conjure up this thing between A&M and LSU. That's never going to work because LSU's got other real rivals, such as Ole Miss, such as Alabama for other reasons. Arkansas A&M could be a great rivalry. Here's the problem, though. Arkansas doesn't win any. You know, Arkansas hasn't won any of these games. In order to be a rivalry, you got to be geographically close to each other, which you can make the case Arkansas-Texas. But you got to play games of consequence.
And it can't be one-sided.
And it can't be one-sided. You got to play games that matter, and it can't be one-sided. Now, I think it's hard to build a real rivalry when you play that early in the year, which Arkansas and A&M have traditionally played towards the front end of the SEC slate. Maybe somehow you could figure out how to play it a little bit later in the year. There's a lot of moving parts with this series, but basically because you don't play on home campuses. That's the other thing. Now, I know you can say, well, I was getting ready to say, well, it's hard to build a great rivalry when you don't play on campus. Well, look at the cocktail party in Georgia and Florida. Look at the Red River rivalry. Or what do they call it now?
Used to be the Red River Shootout, but apparently PC enough.
Anyway, Texas, Oklahoma. Those are played in neutral sites. But this thing doesn't – I mean, in Arkansas and A&M played for decades home and home as conference rivals.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this rivalry needs to be home and home to build that kind of feel, that kind of adrenaline, that kind of rush that you need, that juice to make that series a real rivalry.
And in 2024, when the contract expires, I know for a fact, or not for a fact, but you've heard multiple sources say A&M wants it home and home like you're referring to. Arkansas wants that Dallas connection, though. And I know Jarrah wants his boys to play in Dallas Cowboys Stadium, in AT&T Stadium, so we'll see how much longer that lasts. Andy in Mountain Home texts in. Tommy says, I want to beat A&M. It is still the tone setter of the year, year in, year out. So
You used to play Alabama week four like every year. That was your fourth game that you played. Three non-conference games, you kick off SEC play. Seemed like the early 2000s up to 06, until they brought new teams in the league and there was a real reshuffle of the schedule. That's the way it was. And now, you know, maybe you can make the case you want to play Alabama early because they didn't hit their stride yet. I can make the case they're not as injured and beat up yet. But that was the tone setter. That was before A&M was in the league, that was the tone setter. You generally played them first. Not always, but generally.
Mm-hmm.
And now you need A&M to be that game that's your tone setter for the year. Absolutely. That needs to be the game where you kind of flex your muscles a little bit and you show where you're at as a program. Take a little pride. Stand up. Bow up a little bit. And, you know, so far, you know, since A&M's joined the league, they pretty well owned Arkansas. Not pretty well. They have. You know.
Another game that stands out, and I think this is more personal than anything, is the Auburn Tigers on the road. And that is, that takes place November 7th. Hey, now listen. Here's why. Who are the probably two out of the top five most hated people in terms of Arkansas Razorback Athletics associated with the program? Maybe two of top three. Who are they?
I'm guessing you're going to say Gus is one of them.
Okay. Who's the other?
Well, Chad Morris would be somewhere on that list.
Okay.
Brett Bielema might be another one that people have some disdain for.
Well, you named the two who happen to be coaches for the Auburn Tigers.
Right.
So maybe
Chad Morris, Gus Malzahn.
Maybe the rivalry is not there in terms of Auburn-Arkansas, even though there have been some really fun games over there.
And I'm not saying Gus doesn't have his detractors in this state. I don't think Gus is – I think there's a reasonable percentage of the fan base, particularly those that are in northwest Arkansas, particularly those that have known Gus for decades, that they want to see Gus win other than when he plays Arkansas. So I don't think he's as hated as some people want him to be or they feel – as much hatred for him, but I think Chad Morris is universal.
I don't think
there's any question Chad Morris has got universal hatred. I think there's a lot of people. Now, I think there's some people that really have disdain for Gus Malzahn. And particularly the further you move away from Springdale, the further you get away from the epicenter, that's the way they feel. But I don't think Chad Morris, he better not get a flat tire driving across this state because he's going to get no help.
So with the Gus Malzahn thing, and there are certain pockets that do, and I don't, and let me go on there. I don't have really anything against Gus Malzahn. There's never been. I took him and Mitch's side after watching the identity theft of Mitch Mustain and reading a lot of other stuff into it. But I'm telling you, from a fan base perspective, there are a lot more Arkansas fans that don't like Gus Malzahn compared to the ones that do like him.
I don't know how much more it is, but there are a lot of people that don't like Gus Malzahn in this state because when he was at Shiloh Christian or Springdale, his teams used to beat your teams, you know, 89-2, you know. They didn't like that part. So, you know, there's some people that's part of it. And there's people that just, you know, didn't like the way everything ended. But I think in the end, a lot of people, whether they want to admit it or not, know that if Gus had become your coach at a certain point and juncture rather than maybe Bielema or maybe some other opportunities where you tried to hire him and you had a real chance, the state of your program would be in a much better place than it is right now.
No question. I've been on the record before that I think Gus Malzahn would have been a great hire, and I'll continuously hold up that picket fence or whatever. It just seems like he's toyed with Arkansas at this point. Anytime a contract negotiation comes up, when he comes back,
feels like he, and that's part of the people that don't like him, feel like he played Arkansas when they hired Chad Morris, and now the two of them are there together. So to your point, which I think is accurate, there are a lot of people that would like to see you win that game, maybe more than some other games, because you'd like to beat those two guys.
Yeah, so the combination of those two guys being on the other sidelines, maybe that game isn't significant as significant rankings-wise as LSU or Alabama, and you maybe there's
what's
some
what's going to make me feel good?
Yeah, it's the personal. That's why I brought up the first thing I said when I brought up Auburn is the personal side of it, which, you know, time heals everything, and now, Gus hasn't been in Arkansas, as far as coaching-wise, since 2006.
As a coach.
Chad, correct.
He's been here as the Auburn head coach.
Yes, correct. But someone associated with the Arkansas football program since 2006, and then after that season. Chad Morris, it hadn't even been a full year. So that pain has not subsided as of late.
And you're still paying him money.
Correct.
You, as the university, as a foundation, are still writing this man checks.
So you tie that all together, the fact that, yes, there's still a lot of people that do not like Gus Malzahn, and that Chad Morris, depending on who you ask, I would say he's probably, if you're associating with just Arkansas sports, the most hated right now. And I don't like getting on air.
Yeah, he did Brett Bielema some favors.
Yeah, I don't like getting on air and just like throwing out hate and blah, and like all that crap, but that's just the reality of the situation. He is the most hated guy when it comes to Arkansas sports. That is Chad Morris. That being said, again, those two are on the sidelines that you're facing off with. Maybe it's not the A on the helmet that you really, really, really want to beat. But it's the guy in the visor. It's both guys in the visor on the other end. And I don't know if Morris is Morris going to be up top, or is he going to be?
I don't know.
I don't remember. I know Gus will be down low. Obviously, he's the head coach. Morris might be up top, but it's those two individual guys. And we know how much like personal like things irk you, or it's an extra level. Sometimes it's not just people just think the perception of something is, this is the reality of the situation, blah, blah, blah. But when there's an additional personal aspect added to it, that ups the ante a little bit.
Times two.
Ups everything. Exactly.
Because there's personal stuff with Gus, and they continue to come in Arkansas and recruit players. And, I mean, there are plenty of reasons why you want to beat Auburn.
Yeah. And I opened the conversation. I think a lot of people will just say Alabama. When you really dive in and think about it, then you might rethink your initial thought. You might say, well, maybe it's not just Alabama. Maybe I want to beat Auburn because of Gus and Chad. Or maybe I want to beat Notre Dame because they're cocky you-know-whats, and that would really set the tone of the season. What about LSU?
But you'd trade three guaranteed losses for one Alabama win.
It just depends on what those losses are. So with LSU,
maybe not.
What would
do more for your program as far as the quality of a win? It'd have to be Alabama would do more for you than anything.
Well, it depends on where LSU's ranked or Alabama's ranked. I would say if LSU's still number one,
LSU's not going to be LSU again.
No, I would agree 100%.
Staff changes, personnel change. I mean, they're right. LSU's going to be much more middle of the pack than front runner this year.
I need to get a list of everyone they lost. I mean, just off the top of my head, you lose Joe Brady, your passing game coordinator, who's off with Matt Rhule, the Carolina Panthers. You lose Dave Aranda, who's now the new coach of the Baylor Bears, a tremendous defensive mind. He's probably one of the best. Him and Venables are probably the two best in college football when it comes to coaching defense. You lose Chaseon. You lose Joe Burrow, who's arguably had one of the best single seasons in history. I think you lost Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I forget if you lost Jefferson or if you lost Jamar Chase. I always mix those two up. You lost one of your stud wide receivers. They lost people all over that field.
And just like Arkansas, they're losing spring football too.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't.
In a year where they're transitioning staff. Now, still important to point out, Steve Emsinger is still there as the offensive coordinator.
You just have Scott Linehan, who's your new passing game coordinator. So that's. But again, you bring up a good point. What's more difficult to implement, offense or defense? It's offense. Like offense, in as far as just the schemes and everything involved, it's offense in terms of football wise. So, yes, they have still Steve Ensminger, they're kind of their holding piece, but they still have to establish Scott Linehan as the passing game corner. I think with LSU, it would be great in the sense that, yes, right now they have a number. Because we look up what they're ranked preseason. They're going to be top 10. I don't know if they'll be top 5 because of all they lost.
LSU is going to be ranked number 4 preseason. Okay. That's according to NCAA.com.
That could change with everything they lost and if they don't get off to a hot start or whatever. But I think LSU, like, think of how glorious it was back in 2015 when you went down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. For those who made the trip or those who are watching on TV, and you just whooped up on them. Oh my goodness, was that game. Dan Enos called a great game. Arkansas just dominated thoroughly and really could have ran away with it even more, but that was fantastic. Unbelievable. You bring down the rain, you get the boot, that would be nice. But what most people, again, Tommy, and what you brought up, most people are going to say Alabama. It's the easy conventional pick.
Well, I mean, yeah, because it probably does. It's the highest quality win. If you want to go for quality, there's no more quality win generally than beating Alabama. Now, I don't think this may not be the Alabama we've seen because they're not going to have a dynamic quarterback as it appears, but I guarantee you one thing, they're going to have one of the toughest defenses in America again.
They
fell off a little bit last year, particularly in the secondary. Saban's not going to do it twice.
Yeah.
The top 5 they have on NCAA.com, it's Clemson, number 1, Ohio State, 2, Bama, 3, LSU, 4, and Georgia, 5.
See, you have to play 2 top 5 teams this year, and those games are back-to-back.
And
on the road.
Yeah. They have Auburn.
No, they're home.
No, that's all right. This year they're at home.
Yeah. Right. No. You at least get them at home, but they are
back-to-back.
They are back-to-back, which is tough.
You wish some year they'd separate that because it's always Bama and LSU home and road together. Do you wish you could separate that, or do you like the fact that, well, every other year you got a chance to have a little better run? See, I think it's tougher the years you've got them at home because that makes it more difficult to win at home. I think this year's going to be one of the tougher years.
You're expected to lose on the road.
Right.
But at home, it's like, can you get after it a little bit?
You had your druthers, would you split those?
Here's what I would say. I don't want them back to back. If you want them at home,
you never want
both
those
year,
there.
But if I could change something rather than split home and away, I would just say not back-to-back because, I mean, if you do get hot eventually in a couple of years, you'd love to have both those teams at home. We're just from the perspective right now.
You've got to time it up.
Correct. We're at the perspective right now where the team's not any good, and that's our perception is, hey, you have to play both of these teams at home, which no one wants to do.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd, they just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
I asked Tommy before the break. Tom brought up the Dan Skipper tripping play back in 2014. Right at the start of the fourth quarter where Jay Will took it down to the 1 yard line. And I'm watching this play myself and you can clearly see just Skipper like fall and then just stick out his leg. I just never seen that called in the game before.
Because you never see that play. I mean, you never see a player so blatantly do that. No, you're right.
And
it's on the tail end of the play, had no bearing on it.
Jay Will is 10 yards from Skipper. 10 yards.
But it was as blatant as it gets, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I'm just saying for like Skipper to do that. Referee called it, but
right.
For Skipper to do that.
But your point of where was Jay Will? 10 yards downfield. It had no bearing on the play.
So. At all. So, oh, man, the Texas A&M memories, there's not any good ones as of late.
Painful ways to lose. No. Arkansas seems to create new ones every year.
Single year. So this starting 5 all-time Hogs, got to commend the Arkansas basketball social media department, who's been tremendous, fantastic, whatever adjective, adverb you want to use, all season long. Must has really got things going. They put out this list of choose your starting 5, and you see this a lot of times with different leagues, different teams, different players of, hey, pick your starting five. Now, typically, there's a dollar amount, with the best players being up top or five,
right.
The good players four, middle tier three, and then on and on. But this one just is pick your starting five. Mm. And the players listed, we'll do this real quick. We'll just do last names. Moncrief, Day, Johnson, Portis, Williamson, Macon, Brewer Sr., Thurman, Klein, Mayberry, Hannes, Delf, Miller, Terry, Brewer Jr., Hastings, Walker, Kingsley, Robertson, Gafford, Bradley, Reed, Barford, Beverly, and then Fortson, Boyer, Qualls, Weems, Monica, and Beck. Those are the players listed. And Tommy, I'm going to let...
Did you say Joe Klein?
Yes, correct.
Okay, good. Okay.
Age before beauty. You can go first.
All right, let me start with my five. Okay. I'd go with Joe Klein. I think he's one of the best inside guys. And would you go Klein or Oliver Miller? Both were great. Joe Klein was my childhood hero. So I'm going Joe Klein at my five. Do you put Corliss at a four?
Depends on how you want to play. If you're the coach of this team, you pick how you want to play.
I think I put Corliss at my four. You got to get Sidney Moncrief in there as one of your guards. So there's three of my players. Corey Beck's my point guard. And I don't think this guy's on your list, but I may probably have to bring him off the bench. Sonny Weems has got to be a player. He's one of the most.
He's on the list.
Okay, give me Sonny Weems just because no one else is going to say Sonny Weems.
Okay, so let's.
Because he could jump out of the gym. One of the most athletic guys to ever play at Arkansas, Sonny Weems.
Weems, Beck, Klein, Corliss. Who's your fifth?
Sid the Kid.
Okay, that's pretty much. Here's mine, and Jenkins, we'll get into yours next. Bobby Portis at my five,
okay.
Who can be a stretch five. And then the others are kind of positionless. Ronnie Brewer would probably run my point forward.
Okay.
6'7", just athletic as I'll get out. Scotty Thurman, 6'6", shooting wing. Then I'd have Pat Bradley and Sidney Moncrief
at
my guards. Mm-hmm. I want shooting on the floor at all times, and those guys can shoot. My sixth man is Joe Johnson, another shooter, 6'7". Yeah. Now, people are going to be ticked off. There's no Joe Klein. There's no Corliss. But I'm coming from the position of today's game and how I'd want to play.
Neither one of us shooting. Said Todd Day. Todd Day's got to be on somebody's list.
He's probably on a lot of people's list.
Scoring machine, man.
I thought about Lee Mayberry as well. I also factored in size, the size aspect. Mm-hmm. I mean, the smallest guy I have is Pat Bradley at 6'2". And, I mean, you think about Sidney Moncrief, who was such a great two-way player.
Maybe the greatest player to ever play at Arkansas, including Corliss.
Correct.
I mean, the 1-2 conversation is always going to be Sid and Corliss until someone else comes along.
Yeah, and I think we talked about team aspect earlier with Mason not getting the recognition he deserves because the team didn't do it. With Sidney, the only reason I don't think he's ahead of Corliss is because what Corliss did as a team when he was at Arkansas, right?
Not that those teams in the late 70s, 78 and 79, weren't far behind, though.
Yeah, because they hosed against Indiana State and they went to a Final Four.
Should have went to a second one, went to a first one. That back then, they played a consolation game, I believe, as they beat Notre Dame in 78 in the consolation game to finish third.
Correct.
So,
who did they lose to in the Final Four in 78, by the way? You know? Because I know they lost Elite Eight 78 against Indiana State. But, and by the way, folks, it's Tuesday, but if you didn't get a chance to listen to U.S. Reed's interview on Friday, he was kind enough to give us some time, gave us about 15 to 20 minutes. Fantastic. Phenomenal. He was awesome. He touched on so many different milestones from those teams, and when he played, it was an incredible interview.
Lost to Kentucky.
Okay. Ugh, that stinks.
64-59.
Who was Rupp wasn't the coach in 78, was he?
Nah.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, and Tubby obviously wasn't there yet.
I know who their next coach was after that.
Who was there? I don't even know.
Eddie Sutton.
Oh, okay. You know, yeah, obviously Eddie. Okay. Yeah, because that's where he left for Kentucky. But yeah, those are our starting five. Again, Tommy has Weems, Beck, Corliss, Klein, and Sidney. I have, and your sixth man is who? Say the big O?
No, you don't need two fives. If you only have six players, so I'd go Todd Day.
Okay. Mine is Bobby Portis.
And probably should have Todd Day in the lineup and Sonny Weems coming off the bench.
Okay.
It's probably what we should. Well, I mean, Todd Day's one of the best scorers to ever be at Arkansas, period. I mean, so probably Todd Day needs to be in there and Sonny Weems off the bench. But Sonny Weems is just so athletic. I mean, just...
Over Qualls, though?
Maybe.
That'd be a fun dunk contest to see in their primes. Maybe. Yeah. I have Bobby Portis, Sidney Moncrief, Pat Bradley, Ronnie Brewer, Scotty Thurman, and Ronnie Brewer Jr. Sixth man is Joe Johnson. Jenkins, what about yours, man? Who you got?
So we talked about this yesterday on halftime because it came out right during the show. I'm a creature of what I've seen recently, so I put Patrick Beverley in there just based on the fact of how well he plays defensively now. I mean, I know he did back then, but just at the transition he made when he got into the NBA and how he slowed down LeBron James and so many of the stars in the NBA. So I went Patrick Beverley, Sidney Moncrief, Corliss, Big O, and Pat Bradley.
Okay.
Salt Lake.
And then I would go Todd Day as my sixth man.
Here's my question. These guys like Todd Day and Lee Mayberry and Oliver Miller, even go back to the players from the 70s, like the original triplets, Delph and Ronnie Brewer and Sidney Moncrief. How well would they adapt to today's game? Because there's no question, like, Nolan's teams that made Final Fours and won a national title, there's a different set of rules. There's just a different way of, not that the rules were that much different, although there's been a lot of new rules put in the game in the last 10 years, but the way you were allowed to play 40 minutes of hell, full court, belly-to-belly defense, that don't work no more.
You can't do that.
And I don't know how well some of these players would adapt to today's game.
I think certain players would adapt better than others based on their shooting prowess and other aspects of their game. But, like, for example, Corey Beck, with how defensive mind he was, I don't know how quickly he would adapt to today's game.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
Let's go to the phone lines. Rashad Phillips, owner of Sports Talk 2319, former college guard at Detroit. Rashad, good morning. I know it's been a while since we talked. Thanks for making some time for us, man.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So you studied Mason Jones the last couple days, and you seem to really like his game. Why?
Mm-hmm. Well, when you look at the NBA and you know, you use the term prototypical, I believe Mason Jones epitomizes that. I mean, here's a guy that 6'6", you know, 220 pounds, that can play both ends of the court. He's a terrific scorer. He's a great open court shooter. He has that toughness about him, and he's a kid that loves the big moments, the big stage. And when you have all those type of characteristics, you know, in my book, I just believe that you're ready for the next level, and Mason has those qualities.
So, Rashad, I know you're coming out with your NBA prospect list, which is going to have 60 players. Do you think he's going to make that list?
Absolutely. There's no doubt. Like I said, what he brings to the table, to me, he grades out as a first-round talent. Just with the way he's able to score the ball efficiently, a lot of people don't know this about Mason, but Mason is, I believe he led the country in free-throw attempts, so he knows how to draw fouls. He shot 82% from the free-throw line. So this is a kid that can do a little bit of everything. So if I'm an NBA team, a GM of an NBA team, he will be really, really high on my list just because of the things that he can bring to the table.
Rashad, let me ask you about the draft in general. Obviously, with the NBA season suspended, that brings some uncertainty about the timing of everything. Do you think the timing of the draft, the timing of the deadlines for players to declare, will there be adjustments? What's your opinion on the future of the draft and when it will be held this year?
Yeah, I think there will be some adjustments. Obviously, we have to with the crisis that we're dealing with as a whole. But again, whenever it may be pushed back to maybe July or August, but I think that just gives the NBA teams a little bit more time to do their homework, lean on their resources for these kids, because this draft process is going to be unlike any other. Obviously, you're going to have to really use the credible people that are out there on the front lines scouting these prospects, the guys that have the connections with these players, because the lack of NBA camps, workouts, so guys like myself and a few other guys out there are going to have to be linked upon from these NBA teams and trust the eyes of the credible sources.
talking about the Rashad Phillips here on the Morning Rush. Rashad, you mentioned Mason Jones, why you think he grades out as a first-round talent. Why don't you think others agree with you? Because I've looked at so many different draft boards, whether it's Sam Vecenie, right, Jonathan Givney, and a number of different NBA draft. Why do you think you guys don't share the same line of thinking when it comes to Mason Jones?
Well, one thing, I think it's the beauty of it where you have different voices in the draft. So I respect all of those guys' craft and what they bring to the table. But I think when I grade out players, I just have a different science to how I look at players. And, you know, those other guys may have a different way of going about it. But for me, I believe the reason why Mason Jones isn't high on those guys' list, because I think they value athletic ability more than they value skills and production. When you look at Mason Jones, for me, he fits the department of production and skills. A lot of guys that evaluators rate guys on athletic ability, and Mason is not a high leaper. He's not a high flyer. He's none of those type of things. But what you're looking at is a guy that reminds me a lot of James Jones. Remember, James Jones won some championships with LeBron. Mm-hmm. He was a terrific 6'7", 6'8", jump shooter. He has a lot of those qualities. He reminds me a little bit of Antoine Walker and just the prototypical 3-and-D wing, Tobias Harris type of player. And that's what I see. That's why he grades out as a first-round talent in my book.
So you mentioned some of those comparisons, Rashad. I've always thought he has a similar game to Paul Pierce. Now, it's hard to compare a guy like Mason Jones to a Hall of Famer, but you think about the athleticism. You think about how Mason gets into guys' bodies, and then all of a sudden...
Yeah, he's physical.
He has a great step back, and then every once in a while, he blows by you, and you're as the defender, you're just like, how did he get by me? Do you see some Paul Pierce-esqueness to his game?
I do. I absolutely do, because if you look at Paul Pierce's game, Paul played he was a below the rim scorer. He wasn't a huge dunker, a huge flyer. So I do see the skill set that you're talking about, the footwork, the size, the physicality. And Mason is just a fantastic shooter. And this is just not like, if you watch the film, I mean, for me, I watched the first game of the season against Rice. I watched Mason go for 32. And I knew then that he was on to something. The ninth game of the season, he had 41 against Tulsa. So I just saw that this kid was just primed and ready to make that next step to the next level. So I do agree with your Paul Pierce assessment.
Sean, let me ask you about Isaiah Joe. We've asked a lot of questions about Mason Jones. Is he on your board? And what's your evaluation right now of Isaiah Joe from Arkansas?
Yes, he's definitely on my board as well. I mean, he's a kid that's obviously a little smaller, but more athletic, more of a hybrid type of jump shooter. Obviously, he's a better efficient shooter, 40% three-point guy. So he does grade out to me as a first-round talent as well, just because of his ability to stretch the defense. And when you look at the NBA game, teams are looking for floor spacers. And Isaiah Joe, he fits that criteria of a player that's a floor spacer to me. So Arkansas has had great talent. You guys, you know, I was extremely high last year on Gafford. And when given an opportunity, he played well last year, Isaiah Joe as well as Mason Jones. So there's a trend here. I'm starting to like these Arkansas players.
Yeah, and the Isaiah Joe being injured in the middle of the year, missing those five games, how did that affect him, or did it affect him at all in your evaluation?
I think it affected him a little bit in regards, like I said, is the injury process. That's always tough. But when you look at his tape, you know, I'm a tape guy. So I always go to the tape before anything, and my eyes just tell me that the kid, you know, he checks all the boxes in regards to that prototypical shooting floor spacer. I mean, when you look at great teams, they always need floor spacers. Let's look at the Lakers. You know, everybody talks about the Lakers. The Lakers need floor spacers when you're playing with a guy like LeBron James. The Milwaukee Bucks need floor spacers. So I see Mason Jones, Isaiah Joe, those type of players in systems like a Milwaukee Bucks. Imagine Mason Jones with the Milwaukee Bucks, spacing the floor, defending on the other end of the floor at 6'6", powerful. So I look at that with my eyes and make sure that it fits, and both guys fit the bill.
So you seem to like both Mason and Isaiah. Rashad, sure. Of the two, which do you think projects to have a better NBA career moving forward?
That's really tough for me, because when you look at draft picks and first round talents or what have you, you know, you have to take in consideration the system, the scenery that they go to. A lot of times rookies can go to places where it doesn't really fit them. And when I look at Isaiah and I look at Mason, I just hope that they go to the right situation. If they both go to the right situations, I think they have equivalent careers. It all depends on which team drafts them and what opportunities that they're given. Mason Jones, to me, right now seems like the more pro-ready, because he didn't have any injuries going into the season. So I think he's more pro-ready today. That doesn't take away from what I believe Isaiah Joe can be. Right now, Mason Jones is one of my top five favorite players if he declares going into the draft, just because of what I believe he brings to the table, and that's size, skill, scoring, and attitude.
Rashad, what kind of developer do you believe Eric Musselman and his staff will be moving forward for Arkansas as they go through the recruiting process, their own evaluations, and what they can do to develop players while they're with them in Fayetteville? Where does Eric Musselman and his staff rank in your mind amongst the other college coaching staffs out there in development of talent to get them from high school through college and on to make money playing basketball?
Well, I absolutely love what Coach Eric brings to the table and his staff. If you just follow his, you just follow the lineage and what he's been able to do. I mean, he was fantastic at Nevada. I believe he's an NBA. I mean, he was an NBA coach, so he understands the entire realm of development and knowing when to get talented players and showcase their individual talent. So going forward, I believe you guys are sitting pretty with Coach Eric. His positivity is contagious. He's a great X and O guy, but also he understands the gravity of the game and allowing certain guys to play outside of the box. And a lot of college coaches still haven't figured that out. And Eric has pretty much epitomized that, allowing his most talented players to showcase their skills within the system. So I believe that they'll continue to do great things at Arkansas.
Rashad, let me top off the interview with this, man. When you think about the impact of the coronavirus, and we'll central it just to the NBA and the college level, Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe, they both have decisions to make. Now, you've graded them out as most first-round guys that have been evaluated like that would go. But with this impact, with the individual workouts and so many other things being up in the air, do you think this would be help more likely kids to come back to school or to say, hey, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, we're going to go to the NBA now? Which way does this happen, you think?
You know, that's a great question. I just think it depends on situation. It benefits. I think it benefits the smaller school guys in regards to now you have to go to their statistics and their tape to assess them. A lot of times, NBA GMs just overlook the small school guys because they just feel like there's too many to grade out. But now this virus has put these scouts and GMs at home in their offices, so there's nothing else to do but watch film on these players and actually get a real grasp of what they are. A lot of times, I don't think the scouts sometimes always check every box. They kind of take the shortcuts to get these kids, but now this virus has forced us all to sit down at home, open up your laptop, and actually study the film of all these players.
Actually work is what you're saying. That's what it comes down to.
Do a real evaluation.
Man. Rashad Phillips, owner of Sports Talk 2319, former college guard at Detroit, also an NBA draft evaluator. Rashad, I remember talking to you about Daniel Gafford this time last season. Now we're talking Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe. Hopefully we'll talk Arkansas players moving forward in the upcoming years.
I hope so, too. I appreciate it, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely, man. So you look at Mason Jones' number, Tommy. We'll get into those in just a sec. They were fantastic this season. So much better than they were last year. And we'll touch on those in just a sec.
Yeah, we're brought to you by Academy Mortgage in Harrison, Mountain Home, and in Clinton. Rates are dropping. Mortgage rates are at a historical low, and they are dropping right now. If you're looking to refinance your home or maybe buy a home for the first time, you have picked a perfect moment despite all the chaos in the world. In fact, first-time home buyers can get up to a $2,000 tax credit right now. So call and check out everything you need with Academy Mortgage. Call Matt Fowler, 870-580-5210. That's 870-580-5210. They got low-down payment options, FHA, conventional. They do the underwriting, the processing, the funding. It's all handled there in the branch. You need to use their app so you don't have to go to the branch and fill out the credit application to get the process started. Do a whole lot of the paperwork remotely before you ever have to go into one of their branch locations. Again, that's Academy Mortgage, Harrison, Mountain Home, and in Clinton. Or call Matt Fowler at 870-580-5210.
So I remember when Phil and I talked with Rashad about Daniel Gafford, he was high on Daniel, just like he's high on both Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones. And I'm curious because I have not seen anyone to this point, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, I've not necessarily studied these draft boards, but every time one pops up on social media, anytime I'm just fiddling around with something, thinking about it, I have not seen Mason Jones evaluated as a first-round talent on a single one. But Rashad was pretty emphatic. This is a first-round guy, in my opinion.
He said both these guys are.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. That do you really feel if that's indeed ends up being the case, that Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones both went first round, and you only won 20 games? How disappointing do you look back and say, "What, boy, without the injury, who knows what could have happened in the postseason if you'd have gotten to display and showcase those guys?" That, to me, makes me even more disappointed in what this season could have been without the injury and with maybe a chance to make a postseason run of some type.
Listen, I'm all for Arkansas guys being as drafted as highly as possible. But I don't necessarily – like, I love that Rashad is all in on both Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe, but I think the only one that is probably going to get drafted in the first round is Isaiah. Well, and that's still a maybe, correct?
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
If you're watching the draft, which eventually happens, you would be shocked if Mason got drafted in the first round, right?
I'd be more shocked with Mason than I would Isaiah.
Yeah.
Because the ceiling, I think, is higher on him. But I tell you what it does say. I think what it does help is it's two more big bullet points on the recruiting resume of Eric Musselman and this staff if he got those two guys taken anywhere near the first round.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. Because what did he say when Mason won the AP Co-Player of the Year? What was the first thing he mentioned when Mason won that? We use this as a recruiting tool.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, look what Mason did when he was here at Arkansas, yep. How he won Player of the Year. Do you want to come in our system and win SEC Player of the Year?
It shows you what's possible within this system.
And
until you do it, it's just conjecture and recruiting talk. Once it's been done, it's reality.
And that's with Mason Jones. And I he is putting so much time and effort into perfecting his craft. But Tommy, this is a guy that went to prep school, Connor State, and still was overweight when he got to Arkansas. And he's the SEC Player of the Year. Now, I know that he deserves a ton of that credit.
He did the work.
But he would tell you that he would not win this award without Eric Musselman and his staff, correct? You would think that he would probably be pretty flamboyant and say, look, I put in a ton of hard work and effort and sweat in the offseason, but I'm not winning this award without this offense, these sets, and Eric Musselman pushing me day in, day out.
And I don't think we've seen what Eric Musselman really wants to be all about because he didn't have a true five, a true post. I mean, he couldn't control the glass. He couldn't run the pick and rolls the way he wants to. We haven't even seen what Eric Musselman, I think, is truly wanting to be all about at some point.
And I think what's fascinating about that is you bring up a good point. These talks about Connor Vanover being eligible for next year, you have already heard about how he's going to change up their pick and roll philosophy because Connor's not as mobile as Reggie and Adriel was and some of these other post players that they've had. He's already thinking about that. Now, I know as a coach that's just simple stuff, but
five more rebounds a game worth?
Correct. And also, I mean, you think about the tip-in probably doesn't happen against Mississippi. I mean, there's so many factors you can look at and stuff, but I think what made Eric Musselman and Chad Moore so different, and I cannot stress this enough, Tommy, is the fact that Chad Morris was so tied down to his philosophy and his system, and he wasn't willing to change. We've seen in just one season. Now, there's certain aspects that Eric Musselman has been staunch, has been steadfast and is like, this is how we're doing it. But there's other stuff. If you look at his Nevada teams, completely different from this Arkansas team and how he's had to go about things. Yet they still won games they shouldn't have because he was able to adjust on the fly. And that's something that Chad Morris was not able to do. He what?
Because he coached.
He what?
Yeah. Man, he coached his team.
It's weird how when you do that.
He did what he got paid millions to do.
It's weird as you do that. His team. Yeah. So you wish you had in the football field the last couple of years. Good grief.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer. 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.